It's my pleasure to welcome you to the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you and that wallet of yours. I want you to learn ideas from me so you can keep more of what you make. Clark.com is our main website. ClarkDeals.com is where you go to save money each and every day. Coming up later in today's Clarkrageous Moment, Wells Fargo is in the news again. You're not going to believe the shenanigans that they're up to, really hideous. I'm telling you, if you continue to do business with Wells Fargo, you put yourself in harm's way. And coming up later, there's new news for you in streaming products. One that's been behind a paywall is going partially free. I want to tell you the trend that is your friend with streaming services. And I wanted to talk about something that Target and Walmart are doing in the month of September that is a really helpful thing. So it's something that Target started years ago, and in fact, it starts today, and it's good through September 13th. It's where you get a 20% off coupon for baby gear in return for bringing in an old car seat. There's a big need for people to have car seats that are up to date, that are not used and beaten up to protect your kids. And so Target historically has had a trade-in event, and it's during, did you know there was such a thing? There's a day or month or week for everything. Did you know that September is National Baby Safety Month? I had no idea. So anyway, it is. And so that's why Target is doing their thing. And then as soon as Target ends on September 16th, Walmart is doing a car seat recycling event. And it's good till the end of September. And what you get for trading in a used car seat is a $30 gift card that can be used on anything in a store or at Walmart.com. So the idea is to make sure that your kids are safe. And I should announce at this time that producer Joel is, you look so good for being a dad for the third time.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, you've really taken care of yourself through this pregnancy. So you excited to have another baby?
Oh man, so excited. Yeah, it's any day now, literally. It's we have no idea. It could happen tonight. And we're very, very excited. We've got two girls and this will be our first boy. So family of three, it's gonna get a little crazy around our house, but it should be a lot of fun.
And this boy you've named Lois Price?
That's up. It's in the running. Okay. We haven't fully decided yet.
Oh, you don't have a name yet?
We kind of, we're leaning towards something right now, but I won't announce publicly until we've finally named him.
Yeah, because if I had a fourth child, I guess I'd name maybe Bargain Basement, Lois Price, something like that. No.
Your wife would love you for that.
Yeah, she really would not. Christina's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Christina.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Great, thank you. So you're a home seller right now.
I'm getting close to it. So
how's that going?
Just trying to get all the stuff ready, you know, painting and all that kind of fun stuff done before putting it on the market. So, and moving stuff out. So.
Well, how can I be of service with selling your home?
So my question to you actually was that I bought my house about 6 years ago, and I bought a foreclosure, and through the help of my dad, we did quite a bit of work and fixed it up quite a bit, and so I've had it for just about 6 years, and in the area I live in, too, there's been a pretty substantial flux of increase of value of properties, and so I'm going to have quite a bit of equity I'm going to walk away from it with.
Yeah, I mean, buying a home in 2013, you're selling today, particularly when it was a fixer-upper that you fixed up. You're going to do great.
Yeah, I'm kind of sad to sell a little bit because of that, but, you know, time to move on. So my question for you was, what do I do with that money? I was thinking about putting in a mutual fund and then maybe taking the interest yearly to put in toward the Roth, or I don't know whether options would be a good option with the amount of money that I'll have coming from that house sale.
What kind of net profit are you expecting? And remember, your expenses fixing it up subtract from what would be the net profit.
I'd say, I'm guessing by the time I even figure it out on my spreadsheet, by the time I take the realtor's fees, I'm guessing 50 to 60, somewhere in there probably.
Fantastic. Okay, so you mentioned a Roth. Are you doing a Roth already?
So through my employer right now, I have a pension and I do pay into a 403B. I do have a traditional and a Roth IRA set up as well, but I've just put some money in here and there if I've had a little extra money, but I'm not like consistent with any of those.
All right. So there's an opportunity for you to do that, where if you were to put in $6,000 this year, if the house closes this year, you put in $6,000 and have a fully funded 2019 Roth. You can do a 2020, another $6,000. So we'll soak up a decent amount of the money almost immediately in just a couple of months. And so doing a Roth is so valuable to you because that money grows tax-free all along. And the advantage of a Roth over the 403B you have from your employer is that 403Bs usually have massive management expenses involved with them that you don't necessarily have with a Roth IRA. So the Roth IRA, fully funding it is a higher priority than funding that 403B that you have. There's no match on that 403B, is there?
Yes. So I put in 4% to get 2% match.
Okay. So that's worth doing. You'd want to keep doing that 50 cents on the dollar for the first 4%. You definitely want to do that. Anything beyond that, you want to do the Roth and build up money in it. And so with the amount of money you have coming to you from this sale, I mean, you could have enough money to fully fund a Roth year after year after year for the next decade.
Yep.
What other things, though, are you hoping to accomplish financially? Because I don't want to keep it as narrow as just putting money in retirement accounts.
I have some other debts, but I fear I can probably trip all those off in the next year. So I wasn't even worried about taking the house money for that because I just didn't know where to park the money, you know.
In the meantime,
my savings account.
Yeah, so you can do an online savings account, which the interest rates on those have been falling as the economy has slowed down. But you can still earn 2%+ on savings. You could even lock in if you had money you didn't feel like you were going to need for the next year. You could buy a one-year CD from an online bank and earn about close to 2.5% on the money and just park it that way. And you could even
Is that a better option than putting it like a mutual fund? Because I will be contributing some extra money to it. I see every month or so too. I'm probably going to try to keep building up like that.
Yeah. So,
that cash.
So that's why the Roth is the first priority. Because the Roth, you put it into a fund, typically, in the Roth. But the advantage of it over a mutual fund is the money grows tax-free and you spend it tax-free. Where if you go into a regular mutual fund account, you have to pay tax on the gains that it has. And depending on the type of fund you go into, you may even have a tax bill each year.
Oh, okay.
So I would like you, after we hang up, go look at my investment guide to low-cost investments and read what my briefing on a Roth. And what I would do is I would set yourself up to fund that Roth year after year. And in the meantime, do just what you mentioned to me, the idea of stashing the cash in a savings account or the alternative I mentioned, one-year CD. And the online bank's completely different than going to a traditional bank, and that you'll usually earn maybe 40 times on your money what you would earn in a traditional bank.
Oh, wow.
So that's why you go with an online bank. And if you go to bankrate.com and look at best savings rates and best CD rates, you'll know where you should go to open those online accounts, which are fully FDIC insured. David's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, David.
Hi, Clark. How are you doing today?
Great. Thank you, David. So you got a question for me about Google Fi.
I read your review.
Uh-oh. Whatever cell phone service you're on right now is not very good because I heard you spit out a couple of words and then you vanished on me. Are you there?
Yeah, slower. The service I'm using right now does not work well inside the house. As you can see.
So how is your life? How is your life on the International Space Station? Because it sounds like you're calling from there, David. I'm going to put you on hold. We're going to see if we can get a better line for you, and get your full question out for me. We're going to talk with Melissa while we're waiting to get you a good phone line. Melissa, glad to have you here on the Clark Howard Show.
Hi, Clark. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly, Melissa. How can I be of service?
I am trying to get my son, who's 11, to quit spending his money quicker than it's even reached his hands, practically, and start saving. So I'm looking at ways to invest for him and to encourage him to do that, because he's not real excited about the idea. I agreed to match his contributions every month.
And then you get a kid more excited about it, don't you?
Well, he's still reluctant, but I'm hoping once he sees the money growing that he will get excited, and that will encourage him to save more over his lifetime.
Well, I love what you're doing because, you know, this has been my thing for a long, long time with my kids. As soon as they were old enough to work, I offered the daddy match, where every dollar they didn't spend, I matched with a dollar into a Roth IRA.
Love it.
And so I have, you know, every kid's wired the way he or she's going to be wired. And so sometimes, no matter what, you won't be able to motivate a kid to become a saver, to live on less than he or she makes. And in your case, with your 11-year-old son, it sounds like there's going to be a bit of work to create a savings environment. I have the same thing with my 14-year-old son. He's not into saving. He's already figured out what he'd spend the next dollar on before he's ever gotten that dollar.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
So, and I can tell you, three kids growing up in the same household, they're all different about money.
Isn't that funny?
So if you want to do this kind of thing, is he doing any work at all, or is this money from allowances and things like that?
It's money from allowances. He's only 11, so he gets money from his grandmother's, but mostly, you know, he does chores every week and we pay him a small allowance. So it's not a lot of money.
Well, but you can go to one of the big investment houses and open an account for a kid, like Charles Schwab and Fidelity Investments allow you to open a kid's account, investment account, with like no money. I think it's $100 at Schwab and zero at Fidelity.
Okay.
And they've got offices all over the place. So you can take him in to one of the investor centers and he can be there as part of the process of opening an account. That makes it a lot more real.
Sure.
And then you can let him, even if he makes bad choices, let him decide what to invest it in. A lot of times a kid will want to put it into a company that's familiar to him.
Okay.
But it would be a better idea if it went into a straight index fund.
Now, I've heard you talk about the Fidelity Zero Index. Is that what you would?
Yeah, Fidelity Zero would be a great choice. Fidelity Zero Total Stock Market Fund would be perfect because there's no minimum, no fees, and he would be suddenly an investor in thousands of companies.
Okay.
He would be a true capitalist at that point, and with your match available, there would be a direct incentive for him to not spend that money he gets from the grandmothers and put it instead into work for himself. Return on investment sometimes can be a big motivator. Today's Clarkrageous moment is another in a long series of Clarkrages involving Wells Fargo, the criminal enterprise impersonating a bank. Wells Fargo has been a disaster as an operation, as they've engaged in massive frauds over the years, taking advantage of millions of their customers in so many different ways, account holders, mortgage borrowers, auto loan borrowers, and Wells Fargo continues to be under a cloud with a tight federal collar on restricting their growth and what lines of business they can be in. Well, this is a whole new chapter that was in the American Banker, and it's about Pastor Reverend Edwards, who is a United Methodist Church pastor, has been for the last 30 years. Wells Fargo mistakenly had the pastor arrested for supposedly committing check fraud. The suspect turned out to be a 20-year-old woman. Now, how do you mistake an older minister for a 20-year-old woman? They did. Wells Fargo ended up in a situation where the pastor was charged criminally, had to hire legal defense, ended up with reputational harm and a lot of expenses before the charges were dropped. Wells Fargo now refuses to pay any of his legal expenses, invoked an arbitration clause, will not respond to the media, and says they did apologize, but they've left him high and dry. And this is despicable conduct. This is a company that says it's a new organization that's learned its lessons. Obviously, they need to go back to school. They need some remedial training. This is not how you treat people. Show people decency and respect, Wells Fargo. Great to have you here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to save more and spend less. And don't let anyone ever rip you off. I want to talk to you about the continuing trend in streaming as the industry goes through a massive shakeout period. And I've shared with you the Disney stuff and everything Disney's doing to try to sign up many tens of millions of people to their streaming service that launches in November. And we're getting to a point where there's going to be significant shifting with players coming in with streaming who own a lot of their own content, coming in and squeezing out organizations that don't have a lot of their own content. That's why you have various companies selling streaming that are spending billions on original programming. Apple has gotten into this, Amazon. Of course, Netflix with original shows, they figured this out first. YouTube doing original shows. And YouTube's an interesting kind of picture because YouTube has various services under the YouTube umbrella. And some of them, like the cat videos, obviously are all free. And then there are various subscription services, YouTube TV, which is the most popular of the TV streaming services for traditional cable channels. And they've taken by far the most market share. And then they have their own original content as well. So they are now experimenting with a system where you can either go where you pay a monthly fee for original programming, or you get it free with watching ads. And you're going to see more and more available in terms of streaming products that are going to be ad supported, no monthly fee, because people are only going to be willing to pay so many monthly subscriptions. And there's going to be a squeeze play. They're going to be organizations that get squeezed out of it if they stick to a paid monthly subscription model. And so you're going to see a variety of moves. Like, think about Hulu. For years has given people the choice of paying so much with commercials, so much more without commercials. And you're going to see this kind of thing where you get to pick and choose based on what your pain points are, whether your pain points are in your wallet or with your eyes. and you'll decide. Speaking of eyes, YouTube has a lot of kids that consume content there, and Google is having to pay, according to published reports, $200 million in fines for invading the privacy of children watching children's content. And this is ridiculous that an FTC investigation found that YouTube was collecting data on young children. And this is Google that owns this. There's no explanation that would make sense. There's no excuse for this. And I just don't know that $200 million for a company the size of Google is any deterrence at all in terms of getting them to change their behavior. But I hope just because it's the right thing to do that Google stops spying on children using its services. David's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, David.
Hi, Clark. It's an honor speaking with you today.
Well, great to have you here, and we're going to talk about another Google service, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Tell me.
Well, I'm on a major carrier, but it's on the all I can say is inside the house, it does not work too well and never has. And even though we're pretty close to the cell tower, so I was thinking about switching to Google Fi. And I know you did a great review on it. I just want to know if there's any downside to switching to Google Fi that you can think of.
The only downside with Google Fi is if you're a heavy consumer of data, where you would normally max out every month, you end up with a monthly bill. Remind me, is it 80 a month?
Right.
Is where
right.
It caps. So if you are a massive consumer of data, the 80 puts you above the various discount choices in the market.
Right.
But if you use a more limited amount of data, is you pay only metered for what you use till you hit that $80 cap, most people end up with a monthly bill somewhere in the 30s.
Well, that's great.
And
that's about what I'm paying right now. I'm paying $35 plus tax, $37.50.
And the coverage with Google Fi is excellent. You know, people who try it and use it seem to really like both the bills and the quality of the coverage, especially if you travel at all internationally. Google Fi is the best choice out there.
Well, that's good news. I do have one question.
Sure.
So if you're inside the house, if you have Wi-Fi, it will switch the Wi-Fi calling automatically?
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yeah. So
okay.
The whole idea of Google Fi is that 80% of the time we're on trusted Wi-Fi, typically at home or at work.
Right.
And so it works off the backbone of the Wi-Fi you have where we spend most of our time, which is home or work, and
right.
Then only buys capacity from multiple cell phone carriers when you're away from your home.
Right.
And so
the only thing I saw was the only downside might be the phone might be a little bit pricier, where if you get a prepaid, no contract phone, you can get one for like $39. This would run you maybe $99 or $149 or something like that.
Oh, and you can run it way up on Google Fi because
right.
You can go with the latest, greatest phones and pay a ton of money for a phone.
Right.
But a lot of people have tried Google Fi and dumped it. And then they have a phone they don't want anymore. And so on eBay, a lot of times you'll find used phones that are eligible to be activated on Google Fi and get a real deal on them on eBay.
Well, that sounds like great news to me. Thank you.
Sure.
I returned from the International Space Station.
Oh, you were our caller from earlier. I couldn't hear at
yes.
all. Oh, that's funny.
I've descended.
And how did you deal with the G-forces when you flew up to the International
Pretty
Space?
Good. Pretty good. We're experiencing hurricane winds here right now, but tropical storm winds, but not too bad.
Oh, I don't know if you saw the picture of Hurricane Dorian from the International Space Station, but you see how massive this storm is from that photo. Have you seen that one?
Yeah, I have. And I feel sorry for the people, the Bahamas, and hopefully we can give them some good relief, too.
Yeah, what happened in the Bahamas, we don't even fully know yet because communications are down, and I'm worried that the death toll may rise significantly from the storm surge they suffered, the high winds, the very heavy rains, and you know, the destructiveness of storms is something that until you've experienced one, you really don't get it. But it is a shocking sight, having been in areas after major hurricanes, and wow, you don't mess with them at all. Tammy's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Tammy. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Great. Thank you, Tammy. How can I be of service to you today?
I've been listening to you for a long time, and you were right on spot at the last recession. And I wish I had sold my house right before that one. So now we're getting it fixed after Hurricane Florence, and I'm wanting to sell it. But I want to make sure I do it before the next recession. When do you think that's going to be?
Well, if I knew when the recession was actually going to be, I would be the richest human on earth. I mean, forget Warren Buffett. I would be so far past him, or Bezos. So the thing is, there are only guesses about this kind of thing. And if you look at where the markets are pricing it in, it's about a 1 in 3 chance that the economic difficulties we're having right now will lead to a recession. You know, there are lots of times that we'll have a slowdown in the economy where, let's say, it goes from fifth gear to fourth or third or something like that, but it doesn't mean going into reverse. So we're in the phase right now where we've been in fifth gear for a while. I mean, really, most of the last 9 years we've been in fifth gear. There have been some times that we've downshifted. Like there was a time in 2015 where it looked like we might be headed into another recession, and instead all it was a downshift. And so this time it likely could be that. Recessions are inevitable, and don't take the wrong lesson from the last one, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because there were unique factors in the Great Recession that caused all the problems with real estate values and the massive unemployment and all that, because when recessions come out of banking scandals, they're far more severe and harder to cure than a regular, normal, what's called demand-based recession. So don't worry that if we do tip into recession, it's not going to mean that the home you are fixing up and you want to sell is suddenly going to collapse in value if you don't sell it before a recession might happen.
Okay.
So you can't make your plans on that kind of idea. I mean, the time to sell your home is when you're ready to sell it. And it sounded like what you said is you're ready to be done with this home.
Right.
So if that's the case, then is there a pattern where you live? What months are generally the best to market a house for sale?
Well, I'm in the Wilmington, North Carolina area, and I'm actually over the real estate. And right now, Wilmington, North Carolina, it's high demand because they don't have very many properties.
So I would say as soon as your house is dressed up and ready for the market, you're so done with that house. I mean, it's just clear you're done with it. As soon as you've got it ready, go ahead and start interviewing agents and figure out who you want to list with, or if you decide after interviewing agents you want to try to sell it yourself, then get going with it. Because you asked me a question specifically about the economy, but your situation doesn't really trend with worrying about the economy. Yours is about the fact that you're so over that place, you want to drive away from it and never have to be there again.
Correct.
So That's a motivation. Right. It's a motivation for you to get it dressed and ready to go. And that's what I would be doing. So if the market demand is strong in Wilmington, North Carolina, take advantage of that. And besides, one of the effects of the economy slowing is that the mortgage rates for the buyer are so much better than they'd been. And so they have an extra motivation to want to buy your home. Gene joins us on the Clark Howard Show. Gene, you're headed to Europe?
Yes, we do. We are booking a airline tickets and for Europe for 12 to 13 days, and we would love to get some idea how to book a hotel in Europe, pretty much in Prague, Vienna, Austria, and Berlin. And before I, you know, listen to you say, I really just want to say I appreciate all your you have done for the consumers, especially like ordinary people like us. We have been listening to your show since late 80s.
Wow.
We really learned a lot from you over the years, and you are just wonderful.
Well, you are really kind to say that. And so if you've been listening to me since the late 80s, you know my obsession with travel.
Yes. Oh, by all means. You came to Raleigh area, North Carolina, and we actually met briefly at the Barnes Noble bookstore. That was a long, long time ago.
That's funny. My son and I were in Arizona this past weekend, and mm-hmm. we drove right by where I had a book signing that was also a Barnes Noble. And mm-hmm. I said, I had a book signing over there several years ago, and he said, what do you remember about it? I said, I remember nothing because every bookstore looks the same when you're doing a book signing.
But we have never forgot about you. We've been loyal listening, especially me. I'm just a loyal listener. I learned so much from you. You just don't know you just don't know how much we appreciate.
Well, you're very kind. So let me review. You said Berlin, Prague, and Vienna,
Prague,
right?
And Vienna, correct.
Okay, news. The mm-hmm. euro has dropped so much in value, which means mm-hmm. that the price of everything you do mm-hmm. while you're in Europe is going to be much cheaper. Not good for the Europeans, great for you going over. And
great.
What months are you going to be in Europe?
Actually, end of this month.
Okay. So this is a time that tourism travel really declines. Business travel picks up, but because of the recession that a lot of Europe is in, hotel mm-hmm. rates are far more favorable than they've been.
And wonderful.
And I mm-hmm. want to tell you about using booking.com
as
a primary source because they're so dominant in Europe for hotel bookings. And the other thing I'll tell you is that mm-hmm. I use Priceline in Europe. Virtually mm-hmm. every trip I ever take to Europe, well, I use Priceline all the time, but especially I've found mm-hmm. that it's been extremely helpful to me in Europe getting deals. And what you do is you only look mm-hmm. on Priceline at 4- and 5-star hotels with an approval rating from Priceline mm-hmm. customers of 80% or higher.
80% higher,
and you'll likely get a great deal. And right now it'd be common that you'll be able to get very high-end hotels for under $100 a night.
Ooh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So
wonderful.
I have a guide on Clark.com that walks you through how to use Priceline to save money on those hotels. And the irony is that Booking.com and Priceline are both the same company. Booking.com is all about you booking a hotel where they tell you the name of the hotel. Priceline is about booking a hotel where you don't know till after you pay non-refundable where you're going to stay. But if you stick to those 4- and 5-star hotels with 80% or above approval, you should always have a great place to stay. Have fun. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show. Thanks for joining us today. The Clark Howard Show is produced by Kim Drobes, Joel Larsgaard, Deborah Reese, and Jim Ayers. And remember, 24 hours a day, we're there to serve you at Clark.com and ClarkDeals.com.